You're listening to the Corporate Expat Experience.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I am so excited today to have this conversation with my guest, Mara Smith. She is founder and CEO of Inspiro Tequila. So you know this is going to be fun when we're talking about spirits. Mara and I had such a great conversation that I really wanted to share her story here, or she's going to share her story here. let's just dive right into it. Mara, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks. It's so nice to be here.
Please introduce yourself to our audience.
Yes. So I'm Mara Smith. I'm the founder and CEO of Inspiro Tequila. It's a new, clean, confirmed additive-free tequila brand that is distilled, owned, and led by women.
And tastes amazing. Let's just put that out there. Tastes amazing, which is super important, of course. Well, Mara, you're in tequila, but you were not always. I mean, you're probably drinking it, but that wasn't your business always. So let's step back into the past and talk about where you got started in your career.
Yes. So actually, going back a little bit before my career even, because it kind of explains a little bit of my trajectory. In undergrad, I was an accounting major and got my CPA and then went straight to law school. And then out of law school, I took a job at a large law firm. So I worked in a really large law firm in Chicago for many years. I was working in basically all transactional. So commercial real estate, securitizations, secure transactions. And I got great experience there. You're really thrown in the fire very quickly. And it was exciting. It was fun. But once I started thinking about starting a family, I was married at the time, married already then, thinking about starting a family, and I had no role models there. There were no women partners in my entire department. I didn't have anyone to look to see, like, how can you possibly manage life at a large law firm and having a family? At the time, really my only option was to go part-time, which meant being taken off the partnership track, not working on like the big sexy deals that I liked working on. And generally you end up working full-time, but just getting paid for part-time. So that option did not seem great to me. I didn't want to go to another law firm or a smaller law firm because I really, really loved the people I was working with. I liked the kind of work I was doing. So I decided to take my business background and business degree and totally change courses and not even work in the legal department of a company, but I went to McDonald's Corporation and worked in their corporate strategy and business development group, which at the time was kind of a newer group that was just starting to expand. So I really changed directions very much and then went to McDonald's Corporation and was there for couple of years working in corporate strategy, studying consumer insights and trends and ideating. And I was on a project where we were coming up with the concepts and ideating for the company. And I found that whole process really fascinating. It like opened my eyes to a whole new world that I never like thought of before. At the time, I started thinking about companies that I would maybe want to start. It was the first time my entrepreneurial spirit was really sparked. Before that, I was on this like really myopically focused, like, what do I need to do to move to the next level, move to the next level? And I started thinking maybe about opening an ice cream, a store, a part of an ice cream franchise. Chicago, not the best locale for an ice cream store. So I decided not to do that. But really, my corporate career came to a screeching halt because when I was there, I became pregnant with my oldest children who are twins, and I was put on emergency bed rest. So that's like kind of the end very quickly. I end up in the hospital like, being at a work dinner, and I went from a work dinner to the emergency room, and then I was on bed rest for 3.5 months. And then I had preemie twins, and I made the decision, which is probably the biggest pivot of my life that I did not ever see coming, and no one that knew me ever saw coming, because I was really, really focused on my career. And I made the decision to stay home, that I needed my attention. And I'm very, very fortunate that I had that option because not everybody does, but I made the decision to stay home. So that was my most recent job, was stay-at-home mom and CEO of my home, because then I had another child 9.5 years later. So I was really out of the workforce for a very long time before I started my company.
That's a major job, though. Being a mom, being CEO of the home, that is a huge job, a lot of responsibility. And it's one of those things I do talk to a lot of people, and primarily women, who do find that they're on this corporate track, they're excited about their careers. And once it becomes time that they're starting a family, that there's not always maybe that support in place from the corporate side, or it's just becoming so much of a challenge. And how do you hang on and do all the things and take care of yourself and your children and the job? It's a lot.
Yes. When I was at the law firm, I mean, I was all in, and it's not something that I could do like a little bit, right? So I couldn't, let's say I wanted to like schedule my days, I couldn't say like, I don't close deals on Tuesdays because those are the days I'm home. Like, no one would, you know, like wait for me. So in all honesty, I think it took me a longer time to figure out. Maybe I'm still not very good. I'm not going to say I'm good at balance. I don't think I balance things well at all. Hopefully there's a blend. Hopefully I get one thing done really well on any given day, but then I drop the ball on like a million other things. We started this conversation today and I'm like, oh no, I forgot. My son has a baseball game in the middle of the day. I don't have rides. And I have my whole work day packed. But I think at that time also, when I was so focused and goal driven and like work my way up at the law firm and then in corporate, I don't think I had the ability to like even figure out how I could manage a family and being, you know, so focused on kind of climbing the corporate ladder. So for me, I think I was really good at being myopically focused on doing that one thing and doing it really well. But I never was really good at like, even when I worked at the law firm, like I didn't have much social life because like I just worked all the time. So I think now I'm learning how to do that better. But I think that I couldn't even see that as an option because, and also my husband has a very, very demanding job as well. So someone, it was going to have to give somewhere. And so I actually am lucky. Got to do all those things. I got to have a great, like, you know, career before. I got to be home with my children for, you know, and I took that job just as seriously and still do. I mean, my littlest is still 11. So I take that job just as seriously as my job outside of the home. And now I get to, and it took me that time and growth to be ready to like start my own company. So I feel like I kind of got like the best of both worlds there.
How did that come about that you decided, so you're a mom, you're full on into momhood, right? And what happened that made you start thinking, okay, I might want to start a business. I might want to get back to things. How did that come about?
I think in the back of my head, I was always thinking of ideas and concepts of companies. And maybe I just like, you know, watched too much Shark Tank and listened to too much like How I Built This. Like I always found it fascinating, like founder stories and everything. I'm also someone who would go in and like look at how things are done and like a store or with a company. I'd be like, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they change this? Like always kind of like analyzing how things can be done, you know, better. So that was always in the back of my head. Like at some point I will start my own company. Like I want to build something from scratch. And I knew it would be in the CPG area and probably food and beverage. And that's because I'm just like super consumer and taste test everything and love trying everything. And I, you know, right before COVID, I was supposed to go to like Expo West just to walk the floor because I wanted to go and like taste test and see all the new products. So I knew it wasn't going to be service industry. So I was able to like narrow it down. Then what happened is I started thinking more and more seriously about it. I looked into some other concepts and I kept coming back to tequila. I was looking at some other consumer product concepts and I kept coming back to tequila. I'd been a tequila drinker for years. It's been my drink of choice. I started like researching the category more and more, and I'd go down the aisles of my local liquor store and look. And I didn't think that anything on the shelves really spoke to me as a consumer. I didn't think as a female consumer, I was just looking like these bottle designs, like they're not like super appealing. I mean, I know people love to collect like tequila bottles, but none of them were like, I wanted something that did not have like skulls and depictions of agave fields. And I wanted something like sleek and sophisticated. I also learned that all the tequilas I was drinking, as I started like researching more, I didn't realize they all had additives in them, undisclosed additives, because you can add up to 1% of additives without disclosing on the label. And it's like, oh, I thought I was drinking as a clean drink. I think of myself having like a healthier lifestyle. That's why I was drinking tequila because I felt better the next day. And I thought it was like a clean spirit option. I didn't want all the sugar. Like wine doesn't sit well with me. So I thought I was drinking something that was like in a better for you area, and discover that what I was drinking had, additives. And then kept thinking this female consumer is such a powerful consumer, and started looking into it and discovered that she drinks, she makes up about half of tequila drinkers. She makes about 80% of all purchasing decisions. It's kind of a combination of both of those. I'm like, there is an overlooked, really significant consumer and a huge market that is exploding. And there's this opportunity to bring some education around additives and to bring an additive-free offering, but this is still a really approachable, easy to drink tequila. So I'm like, can we do that? And lastly, I've always been in industries that are they're pretty fairly male dominated, like many industries, the spirits industry is as well. I thought if I was going to do something and go back in after being out for so long, I wanted to do something in an area where I thought I could make an impact. And here, where you have less than 5% of spirits brands are owned by women, and I thought I can provide a female perspective, an outsider's perspective, a female perspective. And that's why we have women as part of every part of our process. So everyone from our master distiller in Mexico down the line were distilled, owned, and led by women. And I thought that will be a differentiator too, because we're just going to look at this through a different lens.
Absolutely. And that was something that just really stood out for me when we were first talking. First of all, the thing about tequila not always being clean, I was under that same misconception. I had that same misconception that it was a cleaner alternative. And to know that there was additives, thank you for educating me on that because I didn't know. So I appreciate that that was something that was important to you because our health is important. We're still enjoying something, we're able to enjoy something, but have a cleaner version. Also, the fact that you niched, you said, I don't necessarily want to do a service. I know that I want to do something that is a product based, right, in this area, and that you focused in on a passion, something that you enjoy yourself. Because that's one thing that I see a lot of people do is they're like, I'm going to do this because it's all about the financial aspect of it, but not that it's something that they're really into or that they love. And so I think being able to hone in on something that you enjoy yourself, that you love, that's huge. A great thing for people to be thinking about as they're on listening to this podcast to say, where could I start? Maybe tequila is not my story, but I'm actually passionate about this. Maybe I could do the same thing that Mara has done in this industry in something that I love.
Yeah, I think it's about authenticity, honestly. And for me, it's so important to be just authentic in everything we do, right? The reason it was important to me to have women, a female master distiller, work with female, or women-owned vendors or suppliers. And like, I just thought it wouldn't ring true if it was, oh, there's this one woman who's like the figurehead of the brand. And then everyone behind me are like middle-aged white male industry execs. Like,
Right.
so for me, everything is about really being authentic, and it has to be the same with whatever you're trying to sell. Like I always say, I'm not a natural salesperson. Like that's not my background. It's not something I'm like ever thought of myself as being super skilled at. So the only way I could go out and sell to distributors and retailers and go out and be able to tell the story over and over, because I have to really, really like it. It has to be my standards. Like everything about it, I have to be able to like stand behind and go out. And I don't think I'd be able to promote something if I didn't really love it. I mean, I have the same standard. People make cocktails, or they'll sometimes want to do a collaboration. Will you use this brand and try it? Or this bartender wants to make a drink with this drink and I try it. And if I don't like it, I'm like, take it off. Like, I don't even want it served, because I feel like that's everybody's impression. And I'm like, I want to make sure that whatever their impression and when they have it is a great, they have a great experience. So I feel like that's the ability. That's something you could do as a small brand though too, right? You can be like super meticulous and on top of like everything to make sure every piece is done like really thoughtfully. So I would just tell people if they were looking, I do think it's, if you're looking and you want to start something, one, I do think narrowing it down of like, what are, you know, what kind of company, service, product, what kind of products do you like? But that has to be something that you really, it's too hard. It's too much work, as you know, if you're not like all in, and if not something you really feel passionately about, it's because it's, you know, I don't want to make it look like it's super easy. And like, oh, I thought of a tequila company and then I had a tequila company. I mean, it was a ton of due diligence and legwork. And I'm still working a lot. It is not like, oh, I'm going to start my own company because now I'll have flexible hours. I work more now than I did when I worked at the largest law firm in Chicago as an associate.
I hear that so many times that a lot of people think, oh, entrepreneur life, I'll have this flexible schedule. And it's like, yes, you can be somewhat flexible. You just have to choose which 60 to 80 hours a week you want to work for, you know, there will be work put into it. It's not just like you said, poof, I want a tequila company and I waved a magic wand and it happened, right? And you mentioned, you know, a lot of the work that you have to do into the, get put into this, legal and probably distribution and manufacturing and all of these things. How has your corporate experience helped you in setting up this business and starting it?
Yeah. Well, I think actually all of my experiences have been really helpful. So obviously from the legal piece of it, I had to research a ton and do a ton of due diligence just to understand the tequila industry. I took a course offered by the CRT, the governing body in Mexico, to become certified in the production and history of tequila. I had to study the entire spirits industry. It's very, very tricky as far as the three-tier distribution system, compliance. Every state works like it operates like its own country. As far as compliance and regulations, I was able to kind of wrap my head around those probably because of my legal background. And then I'm like really good at, I could sit and research and study and I could do it for like endless hours. I'm used to that. So that piece of it, and just how do you dive in and get all the information you need really quickly. So I think I learned that. So a lot of like analytical skills, I would say, from my probably both accounting and legal, like just how you analyze, I think strategize. And from my corporate, you know, working in corporate, that part of it, I think how I was really getting more hands-on understanding of like customers. Like I even got to sit in and watch, we did some like focus groups and things like that. So to get an understanding of like how to get customer feedback, how to understand your consumer, like positioning, what's going to resonate the most. And then really, also, a lot of skills as a stay-at-home mom, I have to say, that skills that we generally overlook and don't think about as being really important. When I went back in, my first thought was like, people are going to think I haven't done anything for the last 16 years, and how are they going to like take me seriously? Then I reflected and thought about it. Well, I managed 3 children and all of their activities and a household. I was never bored for a minute. I was running like crazy. So talk about like efficiency. Right. I mean, multitasking. I had like preemie twins. I can multitask like nobody's business. And more importantly, the piece about learning flexibility, because up until that point, I had kind of very careers that could be like really organized and everything could be like set and my day could be planned and my month could be planned. And like, this is how everything's going to get done. And then I had kids and no day ever goes as planned, which was a really good learning and getting prepared for startup life, because no day ever goes as planned. And I'm constantly having to problem solve and come up with plan B and plan C and do that without getting like all frazzled. So I feel like they help prepare me for that really well. So I'd say like all of those things helped me. Like, I don't think I'd be a good business owner or leader without like all those different pieces.
Is there anything that surprised you about being an entrepreneur that you weren't prepared for?
I think I heard and understood just how hard it is and how many ups and downs. I don't think I really could understand and appreciate that in any given day, how many ups and downs, and how figuring out how to like stay steady and not get too elated with any ups are too deflated with any downs and how to somehow like manage it in the middle, that is a really big piece of it and something that's like hard to figure out, especially right in the beginning. But, you know, and then I talk to more and more and more entrepreneurs and I'm like, okay, so it's not just me. Like everyone has issues. Everyone's having an issue with a co-packer. Everyone's having an issue with their packaging. Everyone's having an issue with something. But initially you take all of those things and it like hits you really hard. And personally, like for some reason, even if it's, you know, a delay and like, it seems like the world's going to collapse because, you know, there was a delay in getting your packaging and figuring out like, okay, we're going to just have to change things up. And what's the next step? We're going to pivot. We're going to go this way or that way. So I think that was probably the biggest learning, no matter how many people can tell you that and warn you until you're really experiencing it. I think you don't appreciate like how much you're kind of just like, I feel like you're tossed around like all the time, like with the highs and lows.
Sounds a lot like parenthood.
Yeah, totally.
So that definitely prepared you well for that. Is there anything that you wish you had known or done earlier as an entrepreneur?
You know, it's hard to go back and say that. I think there's so many learnings. Every time I learn something and I'm like, okay, we need to do it this way. Something I learned, but I actually think I did it well in the beginning, is I pretty much brought everyone on either like a consulting or a 1099 basis. And now then I hired someone out of that, a full-time national sales director. But I think it's a good way for startups to have flexibility and to test people out. Because what I did learn is that you have to be ready to change quickly, which is something that's hard for someone like me. I'm just a very loyal customer. I've been the same person has done my hair for like 20 years. I go to the same person for like everything. My dentist has like been our entire family's dentist since, I mean, he's like almost retired, but I'm like, you can't retire because like, who am I going to go to? So I tend to like to stay with people like that consistency. This required me to learn that like I have to figure out really much more quickly if someone's working, if they understand, like there has to be a match. There has to be a match in values. They have to understand the brands. It has to be an easy working relationship. So I think that is what I would tell founders is don't bring on like a whole full-time team. It's much harder to transition from that. Start people out on a consulting basis and see and make sure it's like a really good match. Because everyone, you always think it's going to be like this golden ticket, this is going to be the perfect person. And like, you know, unfortunately, often it's not the right person. So having that ability to move on and what I've learned is sometimes you need to move on probably more quickly than I maybe wanted to. And that's been a learning for me that, you know, I can usually tell the point. I'm like, I don't think we're getting any returns from this. Like, I don't think they're doing much or adding much. And at a certain point that I should transition or change or, you know, end that relationship. And I usually probably take a little, like, few months too long to actually do that.
Well, I love that advice. And what I usually share with my clients is hire slow, fire fast. And some people are like, wow, that's, you know, but you want to cut your losses if it's not working out. But I love the idea of bringing someone in for founders. You know, I think a lot of them, they'll get funding and they're like, great, I can hire this whole team. And they go out and hire all these people, like you said. And it was maybe hiring too fast, not getting that time to acclimate. And sometimes it's that rapid growth that actually can be distracting and cause people to not work out. But bringing someone on as a consultant, as a 1099, is a great way to try them out. So I appreciate that advice and you sharing that. How soon did you decide to actually bring people on, whether it was in a full-time or a consulting role, but to start staffing? And what were some of those early roles?
Yeah, and I did that pretty early on as far as finding people. So I'll say this, I came into the workforce and I had no like business network because I had been home for so long. So I had to build that like step by step on my own. And so I just started doing outreach. I started connecting. And then actually the you know, kind of benefit of COVID for me and starting this right before COVID, even though obviously horrific and hurt so many businesses, was that I was able to connect with so many people that I otherwise would not have been able to, because Zoom became so prevalent and like you can meet anybody and anyone could take a half hour of time. People had more time on their hands. Before that, it would have been like, oh, you'd have to meet me for coffee. So I'd be geographically like confined as far as like where I can meet people. That would be a big ask. Like that's going to take 2 hours of someone's day by the time they drive there and get back. So I was able to use that time and really took advantage of getting to meet and talk to as many people as possible and become and join tons of communities, from women's organizations to CPG groups to spirits. And the first person I brought on as a consultant is kind of a funny story. I read, when I was doing my research, I read an entire article about why not to start a tequila brand, and read the entire article. And at the end it said, but if you're going to, you should talk to Greg Cohn. He was part of the founding, you know, early Patron team and whatever. I'm like, oh, okay. So instead of like heeding the warnings of the entire article that said like all the reasons why not to do it, I reach out on LinkedIn, cold LinkedIn. And he took the call and like, here's my idea. Here's what I'm thinking. He loved the idea. And he was the first person who like took a chance. And then he introduced me to a couple of other people that were former Patron employees that helped me then. And initially like people who had didn't do brand strategy, but like worked in PR or events, I just made them part of my team. Like they've seen the brand, they saw it grow. And we just started diving in doing, you know, brand guidelines. So I found someone helped me with creating brand guidelines. And then we found they had a contact to do some consumer research. Like I really wanted to start out having like the foundation done first. Here's what the brand looks like. Here's how it feels. Here's how it sounds. Here are our values. So getting the brand guidelines done. And then I wanted the consumer research piece that we did. We ran focus groups, did a survey. Like I wanted to really understand if we're saying we're focused on this like female consumer, what are her drinking occasions? What's she looking for? What does she want in the taste profiles? What are her considerations when buying and all these things? So that is kind of how I dove in. I started with them just as consultants and then found other people to like help me build this platform. And then really my first full-time and only current full-time, you know, someone who's super experienced in sales, but also worked helping with marketing, because I feel like those should not be siloed, because I feel like they impact each other greatly. And I think when in a startup, the people you look for and hire, they have to be willing to wear many hats. I think that's another mistake a lot of founders make. They find someone who has like a great, like, you know, resume, and they worked at a big company. When they were that big company, they only had to do that one thing because there's a whole huge team doing everything else. And so I don't know that they're going to come to a startup and also be doing all the things. So that is my opinion of that too. Like you have to find someone who's like excited about the startup, learning, you know, from a startup about the process of a startup, everything, implementing everything from scratch, and being able to have your hand in so many areas. Right? Like, it's not like I can have like a logistics person who all I do is the trucking from here to here. Like, no, you have to like be able to like also order raw materials and do the inventory control, like everything. So that's what I would say about hiring too, and how I started finding people, and how now when we look for people, I'm going to hire, when it's going to be a full-time role, it'll be a revenue producing role. So part-time, and then we have great agencies. We have every marketing channel, amazing agencies we work with. But like when it comes to the full-time, my next one will also probably be another sales position, because that is where I need feet on the ground, like helping, selling, getting to accounts. And that is a revenue generating and something that like I can't be at every single account at this point. So how can we get someone else helping us there?
Absolutely. You need extra coverage, definitely, from that standpoint. I like what you said, though, because a lot of people forget about this. I mean, there is definitely a different mindset when you've worked in a startup or you want to work in a startup, wearing multiple hats. There's no That's not in my job description, at least. And I come from an entrepreneurial family. I was the rebel. I went the corporate route. So growing up, it was like, I would see my dad, you know, if we stopped before school, he'd go into the office and start straightening things up. And I'm like, why are you doing that? Well, I have a client coming today and it has to look a certain way. And I said, but don't you have somebody who does that? And he's like, yeah, it's me today. I'm the CEO, but it's me today. And I think that's where it's a very different mindset. The other thing too, in corporate, not only are they siloed and usually just doing one function, but when they walk into that function, say a sales role, everything, all of the tools and everything are usually built out for them. And
that's so true.
They walk in and it's like Salesforce is set up to, you know, and you just start plugging in the information and it spits out reports for you. There was no thought in what do we need from a reporting standpoint, where at a startup, you've got to start thinking about that because you're going to have to build some of that stuff yourself. And you need to understand why you're looking at these numbers, not just that the report spits out, voila, you know? And that's one of the things that I've found in working with different startups is, to your point, they'll hire someone with a fantastic resume, but this person, you know, again, had walked into the role, did great, has a big name behind them and everything, but they had a ton of support around them.
Right. And like, here we're figuring out the tools that we use. Like, we tested out and had to research what software do we even use to track that? How are we keeping our follow-up? What are we doing for outreach? So like, you have to be willing to go in without having all of those tools, like you said, like set up and ready to go, and an entire, like, you know, group behind you and support group, you know, that are helping you in your job function. And I do think that, I think there's something we said though, also for a CEO that goes in and has done every single job. And because when we talk to people, I can tell people, there is nothing that I'm going to ask anybody to do that I have not done myself. I pack boxes to send out, samples on the floor of my dining room. I've stood in countless grocery stores handing out samples. I'm doing an event tonight and I am making the drinks and serving the drinks. I've done my own barcodes. I mean, at some point, yes, it's great to be able to delegate part of that, but I also think it's really important to have experienced every part of the company to have an understanding, because I don't have to be the expert. Marketing is a great example. I'm not a marketing guru. I'm not an expert, but I have to understand it enough to be able to make decisions, to be able to give feedback, guide people. So I downloaded a great example. I downloaded Threads today. I mean, I do not need another social media platform, anything like a whole. And I had like, I was like, I just figured out LinkedIn and barely Instagram. I'm like, are you kidding me? And so I was going through figuring out how to post or whatever, but like, if I want them to be doing it, my social media team to be doing it on Inspiro, like, I have to kind of understand how it works. I have to be able to like look at it and see what are people posting, what are brands doing. So that's my feeling. I'm like, that's why I appreciate your dad going to like straighten up. I mean, you know, I think it's important that I know and have worked every part of the business.
Well, and then you also know if something is, even if you're not an expert in it, you've touched on it, you have an idea for how this is supposed to work. So, you know, if the person who's in charge of it is doing a the right job, if you're getting what you need out of that role, social media is a great example. I had one founder who didn't want to get involved in it at all and didn't realize that the person who was leading it wasn't exactly boosting up, you know, the social media presence. And had stayed away from it so long that at some point somebody brought it to their attention. They're like, I had no idea. And it's because they had never gotten hands-on. They realized I need to start understanding the mechanics of this so I can also hire the right people to do it.
Yeah. And I think it's a balancing act, honestly, for founders, because yes, I want to be on top of it. I want to review and have our meetings and someone. But on the other hand, initially, I was rewriting every single caption that went out. Not a good use of my time. So I had to take a step back from that and be like, Once I found a group that I felt comfortable with and they trusted, like, you know what? I don't think people spend that much time reading it. If it's not exactly how I would have written it, it's fine. But getting that balance and getting it right is also very hard for founders. Like, it's your baby, you own it, and you want to be like watching everything. On the other hand, it's just impossible. And some of those things, you need to let it go. And I'm going with kind of like, you know, that it doesn't have to be perfect. As long as, like, you know, kind of like finished over perfect. So
done is better than perfect. And I think that's where the epiphany that I've seen, that moment where founders realize they've really stepped more into a CEO role and mindset once they're able to delegate and delegate effectively, where they're like, okay, maybe it's not the way I wanted to do it, but it's done and we can move forward. And I think that's where that shift happens from founders and slipping into founder syndrome to really getting in that CEO mindset. It's a very different motion. Yes.
There's a Sarah Blakely quote that I often remind myself of and try to live by. And it's like, it's something like, if someone could do something 80% as well as you can, let them do it.
I love it.
So I'm like, okay, you know, and some of these things they probably do better and faster and more efficiently than me. So great. So trying to remind myself of those things too. And at home, figuring out that the way to delegate things at home too, right? There, I took care of everything for a very long time. So now it's kind of, you know, also looking at those things. What's a good use of my time? What's not? For example, I had my groceries delivered this morning. I can get more done during my day if I don't spend that time to go to the grocery store on a work day in between the hours that I have with, you know, usually it's like on a camp day or a school day. So getting them delivered. So thinking about those things, that like, what can you do to maybe lighten up a little bit of the load at home as well?
It's about opportunity cost, and outsourcing is a wonderful thing to help with that. Absolutely. Is there anything, Mara, that, you know, it's been a while from the corporate world, but is there anything that you actually miss in your entrepreneurial ventures in your company that you kind of miss from the corporate world? And it's okay if there's nothing.
I mean, for me, I prefer now that I'm putting in the hours, but it's like, it's my output. I'd say the thing that's hard about, you know, and you probably hear this from a lot of entrepreneurs, it's a kind of lonely journey. So I was always surrounded by a lot of people. I was in an office. I'm sitting in my kitchen. But I was surrounded by a lot of people and people that I could talk to or bounce ideas off of or whatever, or have lunch or dinner or whatever, you know, that, and talk about stuff. So now, I mean, I do rely on my kind of like great community of like female founders and leaders. And so I can like talk to people and, you know, about issues or wins or whatever. But that is very different, where you kind of feel like most of this, you're sitting alone and, you know, getting the work done. But I feel like that kind of like camaraderie and having like an office full of people, you know, for those breaks and things like that. So that's probably the thing I would say I miss.
But you're able to fill it with connections and community and people that you know. Yeah. So that's fantastic as well. What do you love most about being an entrepreneur?
The learning. It's honestly, I think that's another reason why I knew I was going to always go back and start something and start my own company. I like to say I like to be a learn-it-all, not a know-it-all. Like, I want to like absorb everything. So the problem is I signed up for like every single like class, webinar, like accelerate or anything. Cause like, I want to like take in as much as I can and learn as much. And every single day I learn something. I listened to tons of podcasts. I was on my walk this morning listening to podcasts, and I learned about another brand and how they like went to market. So just for me, that is really exciting, that like, I feel like it's enabling me to be a lifelong learner, and that every day I'm learning something new.
I love that. I love that. Any last parting words, wisdom, or amazement that you want to share with our audience?
I mean, I think I always come down to two things when people are thinking about starting a company, or what's involved, what do you need? And for me, it really comes down to two things. And I'm lucky to like now get to talk to a lot of other women and provide guidance or mentoring. And, you know, as we talked about, I think there's no getting around the hard work. Go in and plan on that. And it may not be for you, and put in the hard work, do all the due diligence up front, even to make sure it is the right type of company for you, that you're interested in it. You may find like, oh, I don't really, not that interested in this area. So doing the due diligence, putting in the time and effort, because I feel like that will show, And there's so many resources out there. You can get up to speed really quickly on any area if you're willing to do that. But the second thing is another thing we talk about, it being kind of a lonely endeavor. And I do think you have to have a supportive community. I feel like I go in to things and I have someone to reach out to. I can get a resource. I can find, if I'm like, I'm looking for, you know, a company that makes these boxes. Like, I can find someone in my network to do that. Does anyone have an introduction here? So I think that piece of it is finding a great community to support you and being a good community member yourself. Like, anytime I can bring another woman in to the table or at an event, or make a referral or make an introduction, like, I want to do that too. And like, that's my way of giving back as well. So I feel like being the supporter and also being supported by, you know, a great community of people.
I love that. I mean, I truly believe that when we lift each other up, we all rise, and being able to give and receive are so important. And thank you so much for that, Mara. And how can people find you? And find our tequila.
Yes. So one, if we're not in your local area in the state that you're in, and you can go on the find us page on inspirotequila.com, inspirotequila.com, then you can order us online. So we ship online to 45 states. But if you're in certain states like Illinois, Michigan, we're going to be in Georgia starting next week, and more states to come, then you can find this at your local retailer. But go to the find us page. You can, the best way to connect with me, honestly, is on LinkedIn. Mara Smith on LinkedIn. I'm a big LinkedIn fan. I like to do a lot of posting there. And engaging. I've met great, great people on LinkedIn. And then you can find me also on Instagram on Be Inspired by Mara. And then Inspiro Tequila is like on every social media platform at Inspiro Tequila.
And on Thread now too. And you just remind me to get on Thread too.
I mean, yes. If I figure out how to navigate that, yes.
It's something new for all of us. So Mara, again, thank you so much for joining. Such a great story. I'm inspired by Inspiro and by your story. And thank you. And for all of us here, thank you so much for joining this podcast. Until the next episode, see you soon. Bye for now. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support this podcast, please hit subscribe, leave a rating and review, share it with others, or post about it on social media. For show notes, links, to connect with guests and more, visit us at corporate-expat.com. And be sure to catch the next episode with more insights and inspiration to support your corporate expat experience. Bye for now.